Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Baldoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. The plenary assembly of the Pontifical Academy for Social Sciences wraps up in the Vatican. Dance lovers across the world celebrate the International Day of Dance. We do so with the help of a Catholic seminarian who was a professional tap dancer. And Father Jim Brand explains we all have a share in the creativity of God. The plenary assembly of the Pontifical Academy for Social Sciences began last week in the Vatican. This year it was dedicated to the 50th anniversary of Blessed Pope John XXIII's landmark encyclical, Pacem in Terris. My Italian colleague here at the radio, Stefano Lexcinski, spoke to the president of the Academy, Dr. Mary Ann Glendon, about the actuality of the encyclical and about the contribution of Catholic social thought in the world today.
I think that, unfortunately, the topic of Pacem in Terris will always be topical. This is the second of three conferences that we're devoting to Pacem in Terris in preparation for the 50th anniversary, which comes up next year. The first conference last year was devoted to something that was quite new at the time of Pacem in Terris, the idea that the Church would give its approval to the Modern Human Rights Project, and in terms that very closely tracked the language of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So last year's topic was universal human rights, and this year we are moving more into questions of what the Pope referred to in Assisi this year as trying to understand what is the state of play with respect to peace on earth at this moment in the world.
What are the main problems which represent a threat to the stability on earth?
So I think we would say that the main problems begin with human nature itself. And the Pope has often said, peace is something that has to be built and won in every generation. So in this conference, we are bringing together people from the financial world, like Mario Draghi from the European Central Bank, who will be talking about the problems, the serious problems in the economic order. We will be bringing in a great many people, theoreticians and practical politicians who will be talking about conflict around the world, civil conflict, and international threats. And I think at the end of this conference, what we hope for is to have an idea about what are the promising signs that these people can disclose for us? What can they tell us about new agents and new ideas? And particularly of interest to us is what could be the role of religion in the quest for that tranquility of order, which is peace.
One of the main problems that we assisted to during these last years in financial field, political field, is the decrease or the absence of a global morality. How can the Pacem in Terris help the leaders to find a new interpretation of the morality to be applied in their specific fields?
One of the most interesting things about Pacem in Terris, when you read it 50 years later, is that it has very little to say about the great questions of war and peace. So one has to ask something about what do these silences in Pacem in Terris mean? And it seems to me that just before Vatican II, John the 23rd was telling us some things that now we understand better than we understood then. One of them is that the task belongs chiefly to what he referred to as all men of goodwill, and we now would say chiefly to the laity, as far as the church is concerned. And notice that he already is telling us that the church is not going to give specific programs and policies. The church is rather telling us to take a few very general principles and bring them to life in whatever part of the world and whatever part of society we find ourselves. So I think the message of Pacem in Terris turns out to be not a new theory of Catholic international relations at all, or a new theory of international morality, but rather telling all men and women of goodwill all over the earth to search within themselves and within their own traditions to find the resources for building peace.
That was Dr. Mary Ann Glendon, president of the Pontifical Academy for Social Sciences. Every year on April the 29th, dance lovers across the world celebrate International Dance Day. The observance was founded in 1982 by the International Dance Committee, and it takes place under the auspices of UNESCO. The intention of the International Dance Day is to celebrate dance, to revel in the universality of this art form, to cross all political, cultural, and ethnic barriers, and bring people together with a common language, dance. And each year, an outstanding choreographer or dancer is invited to give a message on dance. The choice this year fell on the young Belgian-Moroccan choreographer, Sidi Larbi Cherkoui, released a beautiful message entitled Celebrate the Never-Ending Choreography of Life. He says that he believes that dance may be one of the most honest forms of expression for us to cherish. Because when people dance, whether in a ballet performance, a hip-hop battle, an underground contemporary show, or just in a discotheque, there are seldom any lies deployed, any masks worn. People reflect each other constantly, but when they dance, perhaps what they reflect most is that moment of honesty. He also expresses his view of a dance performance as a celebration of coexistence, a way to give and make space and time for each other. We tend to forget this, Cherkoui points out, but the underlying beauty in a performance is that it is primarily the convergence of a mass of people seated one next to the other, all sharing the same moment. There is nothing private about it. A performance is an extremely social experience. All of us assembled for this ritual, which is our bond with the performance, our bond with the same present. It's no secret here at the radio that I love dance and am constantly on the lookout for dance performances and dance news. When I heard through the grapevine that there is a seminarian at the Pontifical North American College who used to be a professional tap dancer, I just had to get in touch.
My name is David Ryder, and I'm a seminarian for the Archdiocese of New York. I'll be a priest in 2 years. And I've been studying in Rome now for 2 years. And before I entered seminary, I was a professional tap dancer. I went to dancing school for 9 years, and I was a performer in many shows and national tours. And I began doing that at 3 years old and did that all the way till I entered seminary.
Was your family involved in dancing?
Well, I have 4 sisters. That's the answer I usually give. And they were all dancers. And so when I was a kid, my parents just wanted us all to be signed up for the same activity. So we all went to dancing school together.
Do you find time to practice anymore, David?
Well, it's a lot harder now in this new vocation. There is a group of guys in my seminary that likes to play jazz. And so once in a while, I'll get together with them and we'll jam together. But I certainly can't dance 5-6 hours a day like I was doing as a teenager.
Don't you miss the feeling, the life, the touring, the stage, the lights, the smell?
I certainly have my days where I think back on the beauty of what that was like. That was certainly a great joy for me. But I have to say I'm also very, very happy in my new life and this new vocation. I think the really important thing that I've learned is just to be living the will of God in the present moment. And I'm doing that now, and I was doing that then.
Well, dancing is a gift, isn't it? It's a God-given gift in a way, don't you think?
It certainly is. It certainly is. And I think it really is something that we experience the most joy in when we're using it as a gift to be given to other people.
The excuse I found to call you into the radio is this International Dance Day, in which across the world, people who love dance in any form celebrate the joy of dancing and its capacity to talk to other people, you know, of any language and any culture. What is it about dance that you personally love?
For me, dance is a way of being pulled into a different realm. I think most of us who are dancers find that when we're dancing, we don't feel like we're on earth anymore. We feel like for the few moments we're on stage, we're in a different place. Part of it is the music, but the fact that we have music while we're moving our bodies rhythmically and doing this for other people, you feel swept up for a small frame of time into a place that's not your normal reality. I think this is what makes it so attractive for so many of us, this joy we experience while we do that.
David told me that his Archbishop, Cardinal Timothy Dolan, has actually told him not to give his dancing up.
Yes, yeah, that was a very profound moment for me. Because when I entered the seminary, I had the intention of never dancing again. I thought I would leave it and then go become a priest, and the two lives would be very clear and distinct. And then one day I was at a high school giving a testimony talk to a group of young people about my life as a dancer and then my choice to become a priest. And I had never met my archbishop still at that point. This was the first year I was in the seminary. And he heard that I was there talking and that I was a seminarian, and he asked someone to bring me to him. And when I met him, the first thing he said to me was, "Never stop dancing, because we need to use everything we have to bring people to Jesus Christ." And in that moment, I realized that I would have to continue with this, and that I would have the great joy of continuing with this as an instrument, using it as a tool. For some reason, I find when I dance, when I speak afterwards, I have a credibility that I didn't have before I danced. People listen. And whether that's logical or not, I don't know. But the fact is that they do. And so I feel that God has given me this as a way of getting the attention of people to then speak the truth to them.
David told me he is now well set in the course of his new life. He will become a priest in 2 years' time, after which he will spend an extra final year in Rome before going back to New York.
What brought this momentous change in your life?
This change of entering the seminary?
Of entering the seminary.
Well, I had a rediscovery of my faith when I was about 17 through a girl who, in class in my high school, spoke about the Catholic belief on the Eucharist. And I was really intrigued by the idea of Jesus being really present in the Eucharist. And I had never really, either never heard it or at least never really realized what an amazing thing that was. And when I talked to one of my teachers about it and really did some study and realized this gift of the Eucharist, I had kind of a reversion. I was always Catholic, but I had a rediscovery of my faith, so much so that I really understood finally why God was important in my life and why the church had something to say to me that was relevant. And I was 17 when that happened. I began to receive the Eucharist very often and to go to the sacraments and confession and to pray. And I noticed that I began to feel a peace and a joy in me that I had never felt when I was on the stage or when I was dancing, even though that to me seemed like the maximum joy that a person could feel. But when I received the Eucharist and would go to the sacraments and pray, I felt a joy that was infinitely greater and a peace that was greater. And it was amazing to me because I thought that you couldn't have felt one that was greater than dancing. And I connected all that with the fact that these were things having to do with the faith, and especially the sacraments were things that only through the ministry of a priest do we have the gift of the Eucharist and the sacrament of confession. And so I think at that moment in my heart, a seed was planted that if I want to really bring people the greatest joy I could, it wouldn't be just to perform for them on stage like I had been doing up till then, but it would be to be able to bring them the Eucharist and the sacraments. And that was really the initial spark of this vocation that I've chosen. I have to say, in the midst of all that, the example of John Paul II was also very important for me, because as most people know by now, he also, as a young man, was into theater, and he had his whole life mapped out for him. He wanted to be a great actor, and God also came crashing into his life with a priestly call, a call to priestly ministry, and he struggled with this. And I remember when I was touring with one particular show, I was touring in Japan and the United States at the time, we had the death of John Paul II, and his story was told over and over in newspapers and magazines, and I kept hearing the story of the challenge he faced between becoming a priest or going into theater. And when I saw, reading about his life, but also then seeing his funeral, the effect he had on the world by choosing the priesthood, it really made an impression on me that maybe I could have a similar effect if I were to make the same sacrifice.
I mean this in the most positive way, but I think Pope John Paul II actually made use, in a way, of his capacity, of his theatrical capacity to reach out to people. Mm-hmm. And in fact, people across the globe responded to him, even instinctively, because he was so able to communicate as an I don't mean as an actor in the sense that he was acting, but with his body, with his voice, with his charisma, his incredible charisma. So mm-hmm. he never really forsaked that mm-hmm. whole aspect of his life. And
sure.
maybe for you, you were speaking of the need for continuing to give your message through your own gift as well.
Sure.
You certainly have an extra instrument to do so, don't you think?
I absolutely do. Yes, I do. And I realize that the power there is in that. And so I really do want to continue to use that. And I think also my time as a teacher, I may stop dancing someday, but the things I learned in the classroom with young people are things that will come in handy for me as a priest, I think, until my last day.
You're talking of self-sacrifice, of passion, of dedication, total dedication,
absolutely.
Of hard work, because that's what dance is
that's
as well.
Right. And the fact that I think young people can really read through us. They see when we're being transparent, when we're being real, young people can smell that a mile away. And if we're being fake with them, if we're not being authentic, they can sense that. And they can also sense when they're being loved, when we're just giving them what they want to hear, or when we're loving them for real. And this is what I learned teaching them. I think a priest who's trying to communicate faith to young people, he needs to know this, that young people want you to be real, and they want to be loved, and they want to hear the truth. I learned that as a tap teacher, but I'm really confident that if I use it as a priest, my ministry will be that much more effective.
Would you carry on teaching at all in any way?
I think for that, I have to just live the present moment, because I really don't. Let's say I'm still trying to figure out how God will want me to use my tap dancing in my ministry. There's a part of me that resists being known as the tap dancing priest, and another part of me that is resigned to the fact that that's going to be probably inevitable.
Is there any particular person in your tap dancing life that inspired you?
Sure, that's an easy question. Gene Kelly.
I'm singing in the rain. You're singing in the rain.
What a fact. When I was a young man, I really was not interested in tap dancing. I really did not want to continue with it. And about 12 or 13 years old, I asked my mother if I could stop, just go play football and do other normal things that boys do. And then somebody put a copy of the movie Singing in the Rain in my hands. And I watched that and I saw Gene Kelly there, and what a man he was. It was very clear that he was a masculine person, but such a beautiful dancer.
Come on with the rain, I've a smile on my face.
And I really felt attracted to what he was doing and wanted to do the same, to be able to transmit that kind of beauty. And it was him, he was the one who really kind of brought about my conversion, if you will, to dance. He was the reason I wanted to become a great dancer to begin with. And after seeing that film, I just sought out the greatest teachers, all of whom were living in New York at that time. And
the rest is history. The right place,
I
yes.
certainly was, yeah. A tap dance capital of the world, New York City.
Well, for what I have seen of David, he has made Singing in the Rain his forte. He danced it during an interview for Italian television not long ago, and again for the rector and his guests at the Pontifical North American College during a fundraising dinner.
Come on with the rain, I've a smile on my face. I'll walk down the lane.
As for me, I don't really know much about tap dancing, but I do try to keep in touch.
Singing. Have you ever heard of someone, I think his name is Savion Glover?
Sure, I've danced with him.
You've danced with Savion Glover, okay. Yeah. Tell us some other people or dance productions you've been in.
Well, I did an offshoot of the show River Dance. I did a tour with an Irish show called Dancing on Common Ground. I toured in a show where I played the role of Fred Astaire, Gene Kelly. I did a tribute to the Musical Men of Hollywood in one tour.
As you listen to the band, don't you get a bubble? As you listen to the...
I did a tour of the Broadway show 42nd Street, and then countless smaller shows that lasted weekends or several weeks runs, and always as a tap dancer. This really was my great passion, is still one of my great passions.
Do you have an archive, a video archive of your performances?
Not that I admit to having.
Well, thank you very, very much, David.
My pleasure.
And it's just to encourage people to celebrate this day of dance and dance
and let's
throughout the year.
Yes, and let's remember one big thing that dance gives us is beauty. And this is why we need dance to continue, because we need to encounter beauty in our lives. Beauty is not a luxury. Beauty is a necessity. And the more we can come close to beauty, the more we can come close to the one who is beauty, and that's God. Dance can be a way of bringing us to God if it's done beautifully. This is what I hope all dancers can understand and try to live, because it is a great gift we have.
And now Father Jim Brand explains that we all have a share in the creativity of God and tells us that we must allow everyone else to enjoy it too.
I remember as a child being told that to be a creator means you create something out of nothing. You can't do that, God does. And so really the reaction was, well, God and I haven't anything much in common, because I'm not God, I can't create things out of nothing. But then I realized it's very superficial. We have a share in God's creativity. And the human person is extraordinarily creative. God planted a garden in the east, and there he put us to care for it. The world could be seen as God's garden. Though sadly, we sometimes leave our sardine tins all over the shop, make the rivers dirty, raid Mother Earth before others have even heard there's a larder of oils and fuels. We pollute the air. I mean, God was green before the human race ever got round to feeling green. And later on, when I talk about the 10 summers I've worked with the Lakota Indians in South Dakota, we'll see how they fulfilled God's commandment about caring for their earth, because it is a common wealth. Think of the music, the art, the sciences, where the human genius has been creative. There's one thing I just can't understand. I've tried to understand it. I cannot understand vandalism. To me, vandalism is a real crime against creation. You know, the genius of those who've put up telephone boxes for people to communicate with each other and feel close, and people come in and destroy them. They must be extraordinarily bored. When people destroy relationships. I've always enjoyed music and playing the piano, candle making, wine making, gardening, using my hands creatively. Could never paint. At school we had an artist who came in to give us a lesson once a week. And as a child I always had a bad idea of artists. I always imagined they had boiled egg on their front and smelt rather and never washed and had long hair. And then later in life I came to appreciate the French Impressionists. I've been a number of times to that Musée d'Orsay in Paris. The sheer wonder of the artist, whether it's a painter or Rodin, a sculptor, or the genius of the way they built the pyramids. Living in Rome, I'm surrounded by such creativity. Modern-day Italians are geniuses at design and floodlighting. Now, some people are very clever with their head, some very clever with their heart, some very clever, like footballers, with their feet. I'm absolutely amazed at the artistry and the discipline and the training. And some people major in their relationships. We have a share in God's creativity, and I would have thought the greatest creativity there ever was is to be involved in a relationship, because that is what makes us like the Father and the Son. And their relationship we call the Holy Spirit. Some relationships mightn't be holy. Might be sharing with an evil spirit that doesn't help us to grow and flourish. But anyone who's involved in relationships has gone beyond degrees and markings and examiners. It's the most creative thing in the world to be able to love and to be loved. The creativity may end up in new life of a third person, or it may end up in new life for everyone who surrounds us. All benefit from this friendship, this love, provided we're not selfish, clandestine. So if we have a share in this creativity of God, in our loves and in our friendships, let's allow everyone else to enjoy it. Because it isn't just for us that this gift is given. This creative gift is for the whole world to appreciate and receive its benefits. Amen.
From the English feature program today, and from me, Linda Bordoni. But we'll be back at this same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programs on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English program. Laudetur Jesus Christus.